Good morning, everyone. This is the Dan Rich Report. I'm John Arola. Very lucky to be joined on the program today by contributor Rebel HQ. David Schuster joins us once again. Dave, how's it going?
Oh, John, good to be with you. Whether it's war or peace, I'm always honored to be on with you.
Thank you. It's looking like for the near future, we're going to go with war.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get to peace again. Although, let's remind people, as we so often do, this isn't the only war going on right now. It's so easy to forget that. But either way, we are happy to have you here. You make awesome, you not only guest on a lot of our different shows, but you make awesome content in your own right. Yeah. What are some of the topics you've covered recently over at Rebel HQ?
Well, you know, one of the stories that we're actually doing today, which will publish later this afternoon, is on the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Nations, who's become something of a defiant and unusual sort of figure. And today he just, for example, he's been trolling Russian diplomats saying, oh, you should go get some mental health. This is not the first time he has said something pretty remarkable about his Russian counterpart. So we're doing a whole takeout on him today. We've also been doing a lot on domestic politics, what's going on in the United States. So Rebel HQ on Facebook and YouTube.
Well, I am excited to find out that there are things going on domestically in terms of politics, because I assumed that they had just converted Congress into one big nap room and all the Democrats were just holed up there cozy, sipping hot chocolate and waiting for the next presidential election. That's what it feels like anyway. But definitely everyone head over to youtube.com/rebelhq and you can watch not only the content that David produces, but also like an ever increasing number of different contributors, all providing really interesting spins on the news. So definitely go take a look at that. Here though, on the Damage Report, we're going to be talking about a lot over the course of the next 90 minutes. Not only the gas wars, it's not like a Mad Max thing yet, but it's getting there in terms of gas. Not only with some breaking news regarding Russia, but also Fox News going on the offensive over gas prices. We've got an update on the actual situation on the ground in Ukraine, some negative developments from the Russian perspective, I have a feeling. And then we're gonna get into, we got a whole bunch of nuts. We got updates on the trucker convoy, a couple different attempts by participants to explain exactly what it is that they're, what they're hoping to accomplish with the protest, and then a whole bunch of other stuff besides. So please hit the like button and share the stream so the people know we're live. And if you want to send us comments or tweets or super chats or anything like that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, David, are you ready to jump into some
news?
I'm
ready. Look, you know, in this time of you know, nobody should be ashamed about raising dragon slayers at a time when there's so many dragons out there. So let's do it.
Let's do it. I like the enthusiasm. Sometimes I ask that and people are like, yeah, no, he was run right out the gate. Okay, well, with that said, let's jump into some news. Big breaking news of the morning, Joe Biden has been challenged to do something, and apparently he's got something he's going to do. He is set to announce later on today that the US is going to be banning all imports of Russian oil. Also, bear in mind natural gas and coal. It's a pretty all-encompassing when it comes to fossil fuels, but the oil is the part of it that a lot of news coverage is focusing on. All of this, of course, is coming as a response to the ongoing invasion of Ukraine by Russia, the devastating, you know, war crimes that are being committed right there. So this is what Biden wants to do. It is seen as an extension of the economic sanctions, that angle of the diplomacy that we've been engaged in for some time. It's obviously a massive industry for Russia. Not the biggest for us in terms of imports, which we're gonna get into, but there's some important details that you need to understand to get how this is likely to work in the future. The US is banning those imports. Top European leaders though say that they recognize the need to reduce the continent's dependence on Russian oil and gas, but ruled out an embargo for now. And the quote unquote experts say that while we can easily weather cutting Russian oil out of our domestic consumption as of right now, the Europeans cannot. Maybe something to work towards in the future would be my advice. But also bear in mind that this is not just happening amidst the war in Ukraine, it's also happening amidst a massive rise in the cost of gasoline. It actually hit a record high on Tuesday for $4.17. That is not, by the way, adjusted for inflation. Technically, if you adjust it for inflation, July 2008 had almost $5.50 a gallon gas nationally. So these are the two big aspects on this. And there are so many other angles, but David, I'm very curious what you think about Biden's move here.
I think it's a smart move. I think the United States, there seems to be bipartisan support for it. It seems like something of a no-brainer because, as you mentioned, it's going to hurt the United States a bit less than it would hurt our European allies. And the fact of the matter is, Americans are just outraged by everything that they're seeing, all the Russian lies, all the propaganda that Vladimir Putin's engaged in. Americans are increasingly infuriated. And I think most Americans would say, if I have to pay a little bit more at the gas pump right now, in order to support US policy towards Ukraine, I'll do it. The one fear that I have is that I don't think a lot of these gas and energy companies are the best, most honest sort of brokers. And I fear that a lot of them are gonna price gouge. They love the fact that oil prices are going up and that they will take even greater profits at a time of reduced oil supply. And so I wish that our administration, the US government, was spending as much time focused on US energy companies and making sure they don't price gouge.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I mean, we've seen that already in a number of different industries. We're being told like, hey, you know, inflation is just a natural thing. We have nothing to do with it, but they're making record profits as the prices go up. So that always feels a little bit weird. We could definitely see that here. There's almost a guarantee to be a version of that, in that gas prices were already obviously going up. I mean, they're at a record high today. The ban hasn't even gone into effect. It'll be very easy for people to use this ban, I think, shorthand wise, to imply that this is a significant reason for the increase, even if it ends up not being a big reason. I mean, overall world instability, fears about Ukraine, as well as ongoing supply chain issues, seem like better proximal explanations for record high gas prices. But I wonder how that'll shake out. I do know internationally, David, your point already potentially being proven. OPEC, sources inside of OPEC say that they're not to blame for the surge in crude prices. Well, but they're the ones making the money off of it. I love that they would put out a statement like that. Why the hell would we trust that? You have raised your prices. It ain't on us that we're doing this. Well, who else is it on exactly then, OPEC? I don't understand who else could be responsible for that.
And that's why Joe Biden's heading to Saudi Arabia, because he's trying to convince the Saudis, hey, you need to open up the spigots, have more supply. But the fact of the matter is, Saudis, the Kuwaitis, the Qataris, they love it when oil prices are high and when demand is tight, because they make even more money. And there's a great incentive on their part not to do as the Biden administration wants and put more oil supply across the world. They don't care so much about Russia and Ukraine. They just simply want to maintain their profits, record profits that they're making right now. So it's a tough, you know, and I think it's wise of Joe Biden to plan to go to Saudi Arabia and to actually make a personal visit to the emir there to try to say, okay, we need your help. But everybody should keep in mind that OPEC loves the fact that these prices are high and that oil is so tight right now.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna return to one of the points that you made there in just a sec. I do want to throw out there additional reasons that gas prices are going up. The Axios is pointing to the relaxation of COVID restrictions. I don't personally believe that there have been much COVID restrictions for quite a while, but there have been some that have been relaxed. And I think it's entirely possible that some people are feeling more relaxed, going out more. That is going to naturally drive up demand. So that is going to contribute to prices. But I also want to put this in perspective. How significant is this from the American point of view? Oil from Russia, as of right now, accounts for roughly 3% of our US crude oil imports. So that is not even 3% of our crude oil use. That's the crude oil we import internationally. And in fact, you can compare how significant Russian oil is. If you take a look at this chart, you can see that it does vary over time. But Russia, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, it's not super significant there. Other countries have largely been going down. Canada, as a percentage internationally, has been going up. So I don't generally think when we talk about oil, we talk that, I mean, aside from some of the discussion over pipelines here domestically about the influence of Canada, but it is definitely going to have an effect. If oil, you know, international oil sales are incredibly important for Russia, but it's not a massive thing. I don't expect this to single-handedly accomplish much. It is, however, coming amidst a number of other economic sanctions.
And I love your discussion of economics, because as you point out, when the US economy is doing well, which clearly it is, industry is, you know, more productivity, there's a greater demand for energy. And Americans, whether it's because COVID is over and people are traveling again and industries are bouncing back and factory orders are up, the US economy is is heating up right now, and it needs more energy to supply that. So that's one way to look at oil prices. I know a lot of people are going to look up and say, oh my God, sticker shock in terms of the price of gas. But you know what? The price of gas goes up anyway this time of year as we get through the winter time and head towards the summer. And whenever the economy starts to go into overdrive, as the US economy has been doing, gas prices go up. So yeah, to your point, I don't think people should blame the Biden administration cutting off Russian oil for gas prices to go up. But you know, that's not the point. That's not the reason he's doing it. He's doing it to try to put some more pressure on Russia in terms of stopping their invasion of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. And amidst it, you already alluded to one of these, cozy upping in some ways to a couple of other countries that can potentially replace this. You had you referenced there Saudi Arabia. So yes, they're apparently going to be doing something with Saudi Arabia to try to ease it. New nuclear deal potentially with Iran, potentially giving Tehran the ability to ramp up its oil exports. There's been talk about changing our position vis-a-vis Venezuela, and I get it. I get why they're doing that strategically. I would like to just point out, as we have many times, like if the whole issue is that the world is experiencing chaos due to this authoritarian leader invading another country, committing these atrocities against civilians, we have come together as a world against this, and we are going to stand against it. And then we're going to go and hang out with Saudi Arabia, who is prosecuting an absolutely barbaric war as we speak on Yemen. Is it really, are we just playing like musical chairs with authoritarian leaders who produce oil these days? At what point can we take seriously the admittedly difficult and time consuming challenge of not just like increasing our domestic production of oil, but really changing our approach to energy generation and consumption, really stopping our need to switch which dictator it is that we're working with in any given decade? I find that frustrating, David.
Well, and you just put your finger on one of the difficulties that the United States has now with Saudi Arabia, because at the same time the United States is asking Saudi Arabia to increase oil production, we can't then go there and say, okay, you need to stop your support of this war against the Iranian-backed militias in Yemen, and you need to stop the blockades of Yemen, which is not allowing humanitarian supplies come in, because they don't want to hear it. They don't want to be confronted on what's going on in Yemen. And so it becomes, you know, we have to sort of pick and choose. Is it more important right now for the United States to get Saudi Arabia to turn on their spigots and produce more oil? Or is it more important for the United States to get Saudi Arabia to scale back their invasion of Yemen? You can't have both. And I think that's where a lot of progressives need to be sort of mindful of that. You know, there's some things the Biden administration may be doing that makes sense in terms of trying to put pressure on the Russians and make sure that oil supplies around the world are there. But there are other things that they're cutting themselves off from.
Yeah. Exactly, and potentially going directly against things that they've said. Biden said he was going to turn MBS into an international pariah and fundamentally change our relationship. Well, how long did that last? So disappointing. Not like I'm expecting massively left moves out of the Biden administration, but it's been particularly disappointing when it comes to Saudi Arabia. So I want to jump now to the domestic fight over this topic as we launch into this video.
Do everything that you can to reduce the impact that high gas prices have on Americans. We're asking other countries to think about maybe pumping more oil. Why not just do it here?
Well, to be very clear, federal policies are not limiting the supplies of oil and gas. Let me finish.
An executive order first week that halted new oil and gas. Let me give you
the facts here, and I know that can be inconvenient, but I think they're important in this moment. To the contrary, we have been clear that in the short term, supply must keep up with the demand. Where we are, and here and around the world, will we make the shift to a secure, clean energy future? We are one of the largest producers with a strong domestic oil and gas industry. We have actually produced more oil. It is at record numbers, and we will continue to produce more oil. There are 9,000 approved drilling permits that are not being used. So the suggestion that we are not allowing companies to drill is inaccurate. The suggestion that that is what is hindering or preventing gas prices to come down is inaccurate.
So that is Jen Psaki and Peter Doocy, who basically go at it for like 10 minutes straight every single day. That's basically how it works there. Look, as a progressive, I have a big issue with What was revealed there? I think that she's being fairly honest about their approach. She goes on to say that despite the fact that Keystone XL isn't there, we're still importing the oil. And yes, we stopped certain areas from being exploited with new searching for oil, but there's tons of others we've given out that aren't being used. I don't like that generally. But I do think it's a good response to what Peter Doocy is saying. He's trying to score points, David, by implying that if only they would grant new leases to oil companies, when would that generate oil that would have some sort of, that's years away. Like it's so disconnected from the situation right now. But what did you think about that back and forth?
Yeah, as if the United States government doesn't already give a lot of charitable donations to the oil industry and the energy sector in terms of all sorts of breaks and tax cuts and giving them these lands that they can drill on. The fact of the matter is that one of the reasons that the energy sector and oil and gas companies have not been drilling for several years is because the price of oil has been very low and that they felt that they couldn't make enough money at it. Well, now that the price of oil and gas is going up, one would expect, and I think you're already seeing some economic indications that a lot of these energy companies are going to start getting more oil and more natural gas out of the ground, whether we like it or not. And so that gets right to Peter Doocy's question. The market itself is going to cause more oil to be developed and produced in the United States. There's nothing that the Biden administration needs to be doing one way or the other, because the Biden administration is already looking at these 9,000 leases. Oil companies are already looking at record high prices for oil and gas for the last several years. There's every market incentive for them to go ahead and produce more. There's nothing the Biden administration needs to be doing.
Yeah, and she implied there that their overall approach, despite trying to throw up defenses to what Doocy is saying, is about transitioning to some sort of clean energy future. I'm not seeing a ton in that area. I know that during the State of the Union, he was talking about his EV charger network expansion, that sort of thing. But it still does very much seem, based on what she is seeing there, that they see the short and medium term, perhaps long term, being very heavily coated in oil at this point, which I find to be a little bit frustrating. I get that they're under the gun right now on this topic, particularly because, man, Fox has been trying nonstop. I don't know if anyone here watches Fox. They have been focusing with laser precision on this. Take a look at this tweet from Justin Barragona. They keep coming back in segment after segment, show after show, to the fact that at this one gas station, which I don't think technically is in Beverly Hills, I think it's like a mile and a half east of Beverly Hills, has something like the most expensive gas in America. Now, there it's like $7 a gallon. And some people, I've seen comments saying that they've found places where it's that much. The average cost of gas is a little bit more than half that. So, but of course, they're gonna focus on the most extreme outlier there. And I do think that for some of their fans, it's going to, even if it's not reflective of the price that they're paying for gas, they want to believe the worst about Biden. They want to believe that when Democrats are in charge, the price of gas is somehow the sole responsibility of the president. They never carry that over into Republican administrations. So this is Fox apparently thinks that this is going to be a successful avenue for attack.
And it may be, but they will, of course, never point out that actually the fuel efficiency that the customers at that gas station have is light years better than it was 15 or 20 years ago because of Democratic administrations that require the automobile sector to make cars more fuel efficient. And that's one reason why, if you look at what Americans are spending on gas now compared to 15 or 20 years ago, we're actually all doing better. But you'll never hear that on Fox News because they simply want that one bumper sticker issue of higher gas prices, Joe Biden's responsible. Even though at the same time, in the other breath, you hear some Fox people saying, well, we need to be doing more to help Ukrainians. Well, this is something that the Biden administration has chosen to do. So either get on board and support the Biden administration, in which oil prices may be a little bit tighter because of the Russian supply being cut off. But you can't at the same time then blame the Biden administration and say, oh, look at this, gas prices are higher at this one station. And I mean, it's nonsensical.
Or I'll throw out a third opportunity. I personally think, look, you either support or you don't. Or if you're not going to, I think the onus is at some point on you to lay out an alternative. So you want something to be done against Russia because Fox takes the invasion very seriously. They assure us now. Okay, well, everything he wants to do, you don't like, and it's not enough, which is fine. You're under no obligation to agree with the president of a different party. But what would you like to be done? What should Biden do? Some different sort of sanctions, something beyond sanctions. You keep hinting at it, but what is that thing actually? And right now it seems to be like they know that some sort of logical through line of their argument certainly isn't expected or demanded by their audience. They're just throwing out applause lines effectively. So we'll transition out of this. Tommy Lahren was on Fox to say that pushing for electric cars is a slap in the face to the American people. Well, which is it? Like, are you infuriated by the high price of gas? You seem like you don't, because electric cars are a great alternative to it. They love doing this performative stuff about their massive gas guzzlers. There was that Republican politician who took a shot of, he had literally bought the vehicle in America with the largest gas tank so that he could generate the highest fuel receipt possible. Well, if the prices are high, would you like to be freed from that? What do you actually want? What they want, what they would admit to, I think, in the end would be they never want to get off of gas. They just want it to somehow, against all logic, always be cheap. And that is just not the way it's going to be. And it's only going to get worse every year out from here. There's not a lot of new oil being generated on a daily basis, okay? There are finite supplies. That is why we need to transition over to something else. And they are a massive obstacle to that effort, to the extent that the Democrats are even trying anyway.
Well, and I would love to see Peter Ducey and Tammy Lahren and all the rest ask Jen Psaki, why aren't you doing more for the Green New Deal? There's so many more things you, the Biden administration, could be doing to wean us off of gas and oil. The problem is you can't go there at Fox News. We as progressives can make that argument. And Peter Ducey, if he was going to follow through on his own logic that we need to have lower prices for oil and gas and we need to decrease our dependency. Well, going to alternative sources would be the way to do that. But that's not part of the Fox News playbook. He would probably get yelled at if he actually brought that up.
Yeah. Look, finally, let's end on this, because Biden has, they released a little bit of extra oil from the National Reserve. It only amounts to a couple of days of use or whatever, but that's generally how that works. He's banning the import of Russian fossil fuels, particularly oil. What else, like, is there anything else short term or even medium term? Because even if we got him super on board with the Green New Deal and all that, or massive new subsidies for electric cars, none of that is a short term solution. Is there anything else that you think he can be doing? Or is this really going to come down to the way that he communicates about this issue until some of the more systemic influences on the price of gas that we've been talking about naturally move in the opposite direction?
Yeah, and John, unfortunately, I think it's the latter, because I think there is so much stuff that is baked in that's going to take some time. There's nothing I think the Biden administration can really do in the short term to lower gas prices, to bring prices at the pump down. There's some economic factors that I think are in place over the long term that'll help. But I think the only thing the Biden administration could do is to show some sympathy and solidarity in how they communicate, and to have the president say, look, I get that people don't like paying high prices at the pump. And I get that everybody wants gas prices to come down, and they will. And oh, by the way, we're also going to help the Ukrainians in the war against Russia. So I think he can do it all. But the key for Joe Biden is to the communication that you're alluding to. He needs to, I think, show some sympathy and empathy for Americans who don't understand this.
Yeah, which is supposed to be one of his strong suits. Like, that's supposed to be one of the big selling points for Biden. I think he tried to do that during the State of the Union, a State of the Union, which of course was not designed for people of my ideological persuasion. But I think that he should continue to do that, because people will be feeling this at least for some time. And also, like, I would just say, if anyone from the Biden administration is listening, and especially if you care about this, the people watching, like, in the same way that the war can be a wake up call to the way that we view other conflicts, and that I would hope we come out of this with a different understanding of our obligation to international refugees, how tolerant we should be of warmongering dictators. Can we come away from this situation in regard to energy production with slightly more like a fire in our pants or whatever to do something about this, to get off of oil, to make the infrastructure available for electric cars, but also revamping the buildings, those sorts of, like, can we do that? Can we have a moment where we take this seriously? I would love to see, I know that they're trying, but I would love to see some environmental organizations really using this time right now, strike while the iron is hot, get people to accept that maybe higher fuel efficiency and alternative fuel vehicles would be a good idea.
And it's also our patriotic duty to aim for that, right? Just as in World War II, people had to ration all sorts of goods, and people felt look, it's inconvenient, but I'm contributing to the war effort. You are contributing to the war effort now. If you can figure out ways to become more fuel efficient, if we as a society can figure out ways to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels, that helps us. That helps our foreign policy. And so to the extent that people can look at, hey, I'm doing something to actually help the Ukrainians, even if it feels like I'm paying more at the pump, I think that's a win for the Biden administration, but it's a challenge to frame it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, a challenge that hopefully they're taking seriously. Yep. Well, with that said, we are going to go into our first break. When we come back, we're going to give you an update on the situation on the ground in Ukraine. Some bad signs for Russia. We'll break that down after this. Okay, everybody, hold on to your butts. We got some serious video for you. Let's launch into this.
Ми жінки України. Ми благословили наших мужчин на защиту нашої землі. Мы уже вывезли наших детей в безопасное место. Генофонд нашей нации защищен. Мы присоединяемся к мужчинам и украинской армии. Мы будем уничтожать врага на каждом сантиметре украинской земли. В каждом нашем городе, в каждом селе, в лесу и в поле. За каждого ребенка, женщину, старика, разрушенный дом, улицу, даже сарай. Мы будем вас отстреливать, как бешеных собак. Слава Украине! Смерть ворогам!
Okay, on this International Women's Day, that's the scariest thing that I've seen. Obviously, an incredibly intimidating display there from, look, jokes aside, they are facing an ongoing invasion of their country. They are showing an incredible amount of bravery and grit and more besides in fighting against it. If you're on the podcast and you couldn't actually see the subtitles, it was a group of Ukrainian women in full like military gear talking about how they've gotten their kids out of the country. So they are now freed to do whatever it is they need to do to shoot the Russians like rabid dogs. So look, Russia is facing a lot. Those women, but also bad news. On Monday, this is major breaking news. Just yesterday, we found out intelligence officials in Ukraine claimed that Russian General Major Vitaly Gerasimov, the deputy commander of Russia's 41st Army Ground Forces, had been taken out near the city of Kharkiv. So that would be the second general that is widely believed to have died in action in Ukraine following the deputy commander of Russia's 41st Army, who was killed late last month. This is less than 2 weeks, and two generals, at least alleged to have been killed. Some people watching this might question, is it common to lose generals routinely in war? No, generally it isn't. Generally, they are protected, but there have been a lot of failures in terms of the ability to disseminate information amongst Russian soldiers, the ability to coordinate movements, and it is apparently making their military leadership open to reprisal attacks. And it's starting to add up, David.
It is. And look, by all accounts, Russian troops are facing a quagmire now. They're going to have a very difficult time actually taking control of major cities in Ukraine. And even if they somehow occupy more territory, the idea that they can battle the insurgency of those Russian women and others who are going to be constantly taking shots at them and Molotov cocktails and the rest, it's going to be really brutal for the Russians. And I don't think they have the numbers, according to most military analysts, to be able to take control of Ukraine. The fear that I have, and the fear that I know so many people at the CIA and the National Security Agency and so many think tanks and perhaps even the Biden administration, a lot of people are losing sleep over the possibility, well, at what point, if Vladimir Putin feels like he's not making progress with his troops, does he then escalate the use of weapons? And does Vladimir Putin say, okay, now I'm going to use a tactical nuclear weapon on those supply lines in Western Ukraine or on a city like Kyiv and force a surrender by annihilating hundreds of thousands of people and saying, okay, it's time for you to do what the Japanese did at the end of World War II. What would the United States, what would NATO do at that point? And I'm not sure there's really anything we could do, but that nightmare scenario, as Putin sees that his troops are getting bogged down, I think it becomes more frightening and perhaps even more realistic.
That is certainly terrifying. Let's pause for a second on the question that you raised. What exactly would the US or NATO do in response to that? I mean, it has obviously been a great many decades since the world has had to contend with a world power that felt free to use nuclear weapons. Oh, that was us, by the way, in case you don't know. If I find it to be, it is so shocking in its implications that I can't even grapple with the possibility. But if they were to do that, I mean, the idea is that if you use nuclear weapons, you would incur the nuclear retaliation of other countries. However, if they were to do that to one city or to supply lines or as a demonstration, would the US or any other nuclear armed NATO powers want to risk further escalation? I mean, it's crazy to even think about escalation beyond the even solitary use of nuclear weapons. But yeah, I can only say that I hope, David, that we don't move into that territory, because God only knows what would happen. My gut says that there would be very significant reprisals, but not nuclear. I don't think that they would want to see another city bombed. It's scary stuff.
Right, as scary and shocking as that scenario may be, a lot of people are also scared and shocked that the Russians would actually bomb civilians and open fire on apartment complexes in Kharkiv and literally raise the city and threaten to raise Kyiv and other cities. I mean, entire cities and communities have been flattened. They've been annihilated. Well, I know that there's some military analysts who say, well, the more efficient way to annihilate a population is to use a stronger weapon. So at what point does Vladimir Putin see that his troops can't do it? So he has to, and again, I don't know what the response should be or how it would be. And thankfully, I think the condemnation would be so great, and that would be something that is so hard for Putin to hide from his own people, that I think maybe the domestic political pressures on him would go through the roof. But again, that's the sort of scenario that I fear. And I pray that none of us wake up one morning and have to deal with that kind of news.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you point out, by the way, that there is definitely something about it in terms of the, you know, the capability for devastation. I mean, not just the fact that it is a nuclear weapon, but even the limited world experience we have of their use is nothing like what we have today. The weapons we have are far, far, far orders of magnitude more devastating. But they're accomplishing quite a bit of the same goal just over time, with a number of different weapons being used, a number of different attacks. The civilian casualties are moving up. We talked about the show yesterday. Over 1,000 villages basically have been cut off from any services, electricity, water, those sorts of things. That is devastating. On the other hand, you also have devastation of the Russian side of the invasion as well. According at least to the Kyiv Independent, Russia's lost more than 10,000 troops, nearly 50 planes, 2 boats, which is actually a warship. The term boat makes it seem less significant than it is. Hundreds of tanks and artillery pieces. I've seen footage of helicopters being shot down. And this is prior to what is believed to be an absolutely massive influx of anti-tank weapons, as well as javelins, coming from the US and through NATO into Ukraine. So the loss in particular of vehicles seems like that is going to escalate in the future. And by the way, this is before, like, we've had fighting, certainly. Ukraine is, they're fighting back. But we haven't really had, like, emplaced occupying forces in major cities engaged in random ongoing urban warfare. That is what is predicted to be what could be the most devastating, and that hasn't even really happened yet. What do you think?
Yeah, the urban warfare where you really put your troops in danger, we may still be several days or several weeks away from it. But to put that perspective, that number perspective of 10,000 Russian troops, I mean, the Russians, if that's true, they've lost twice as many troops in 2 weeks as the United States lost in terms of soldiers in Afghanistan in 20 years. And so again, it gets back to these questions of morality. What is the moral way for a Russian military to accomplish its goals? Was it moral, for example, when the United States decided to try to go after some of the terrorists in Afghanistan by dropping the mother of all bombs that literally flattened mountains? Was that moral? I mean, I don't know. And again, you worry about, well, what are the Russians going to do as it becomes increasingly clear that their military is bogged down, that they're stuck in the mud, that they're being picked off, that their generals are dying? What does that do to Vladimir Putin, who was, I think, insane to begin with to launch this invasion? And it's just, you know, it's frightening on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, there's two roads, or at least two roads. One is increasingly devastating targeting of civilians. The other is perhaps a bit more willingness to engage diplomatically to end this thing, to get some sort of win on the books and get your forces out of there. That is what, you know, fingers crossed could happen, because the fighting has already been devastating. An ongoing occupation, which would require several times more troops than they've currently dispatched, either inside of Ukraine or on the border, would be devastating, and I hope it doesn't go in that first way.
Город герой Ленинград. Город, который не покорился и победил. Город, которому не стыдно.
Великую Отечественную более 800 тысяч ленинградцев.
So what you're seeing right there is a video of a group of Russian nationalists. That video popped up in the last week, and notably, you can see on their little uniform a big Z. And this Z has been popping up in a number of different places. Got a lot of international attention when a Russian gymnast had put a Z on his outfit as he stood on the award podium next to a Ukrainian. If we could bring up this shot, you'll see Ivan Kuliak right there. You can probably make out the little white Z. Now facing a lengthy ban for wearing that symbol. But by the way, you've seen it. If we jump ahead to this next shot, you're going to see a group of Serbian ultranationalists in Belgrade who support the invasion, holding up signs that apparently had been mass produced with the Z. You can see it on cars inside of Russia, people putting it, you know, on their cars. You can look at this. This is a, I believe it's a funeral service van who has the Z. And of course, most notably, basically all of the tanks and APCs and other vehicles moving in during the invasion. So what is this about? Well, the letter itself does not actually exist in the Cyrillic alphabet, the alphabet that Russia uses, but it's regarded as particularly incendiary because it's been put on those vehicles. The theory, I mean, sometimes these things take on a life of their own, simply people seeing it. They don't necessarily understand why it is that they're using a term, they just use it. I would point you towards Let's Go Brandon. Whatever the initial thought was, many people just mindlessly use it afterward, but it is believed that it could be a reference to the Russian like phrase that would mean for victory or for West, since the invasion was happening towards the West into Ukraine. That is according to Kamil Galiev. But in any event, you are seeing it popping up in mass once again. It had previously appeared way back in 2014 on vehicles that were involved in the invasion of Crimea at that time. There are some other symbols that you might see as well. A circle with three dots inside, a large triangle with a smaller triangle inside. Now, officially, the Russian military says, we don't know anything about this. We don't have anything to do with this, but I do want people to know that if they see this, whether in the context of the Russian military or in people who are sympathists, like sympathizers for this, they support it. You could see this start to crop up domestically in the US as well as a sign of support for what's going on. So that is, as of right now, our best understanding of what the Z is about. It just shows solidarity with the brutal invasion of Ukraine. David, what do you think?
I think it's a lot like it's becoming what the swastika was in World War II. The swastika didn't have the association until Nazi Germany sort of embraced it and they took it and appropriated that to sort of essentially stand for terror and violence and killing of innocent people. And I think that's where this Z is going as well, that in pop culture, modern culture, we will start to see this Z as something akin to the swastika, which is unfortunate for all of us who have, I don't know, like my kid is named Zeke. And I like making a Z in his Play-Doh. What does that mean that I'm now a Russian sympathizer if someone of the neighbors comes over? I mean, that's how absurd sometimes it gets. And it's the same thing like with the way we've used the word Karen to describe certain things. And I just would hope that people, to your point, keep it in context. That if you see somebody talking about the war in Russia and in Ukraine, and you're talking about the context of Russian policy and you see the Z, that's one thing. It's very different if you see it out of context.
You're 100% right. Yeah. And look, we've seen there are symbols I'm sure that we could come up with that we consider to be positive. None are immediately leaping to mind necessarily. Maybe a sun that would be positive. But no, we see that whether it's the predator mask for cops, whether it's the like the blacked out American flag for the increasingly violent authoritarians here in America. These things are used for group solidarity. You've seen hand signals and things like that. Knowing what they are doesn't necessarily get us to actually robbing them of their power or stopping the movement that they're a symbol of. But it is sometimes difficult to keep up with what all of these different groups of crazy radicals are up to. So we just thought it was important that here on the show we touch base with it. Any other thoughts, David?
No, I agree. And look, there's all sorts of different, you know, things about that I didn't know about, you know, language and symbols and words that for some of us who are, I don't know, consider ourselves a little bit out of touch, you could go through some of the terms that are used in hip hop and I'd say, really? Well, yeah. Any show, any program that can say, hey, this is how the symbol is being used, or this is what this word means, or this is what it means when we're talking about woke or Karen or all these, you know, the more information we all have about how these words and phrases are being used, the better it is for all of us to sort of understand and communicate with one another.
I agree. And by the way, clarification, I said Predator meant Punisher. I do know the difference between the two. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna go into our second break. We come back, we've got some absolutely insane state level Republicans for you. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Three daughters, and I tell my daughters, well, if rape is inevitable, you should just lie back and enjoy it. So that's not how we roll. That's not how I won this election.
Okay, everybody, time to meet Robert Regan. As you can tell from that video, not a great guy. He's talking there about not backing down from their conspiracy theory that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. And he decided that casually throwing in, there he is right there, Robert Regan, casually throwing a reference to the fact that women should just try to enjoy their sexual assault seems crazy to even think of, let alone to say, on a video chat with women. David, this guy just won a Michigan State House seat primary, special primary election for the 74th House District in Michigan. He is going to have some political power in theory.
He could if he wins, right? And he now has to get past the Democrat in the general election, and maybe this becomes a seat that Democrats can pick up. And this gets rights to, look, this guy's a lunatic. And it's not just the stuff about enjoying if you're getting raped. I think he's also dismissed the idea that COVID is a real thing. He thinks that the vaccine is, you know, to control you. So this guy's way out there in a very disgusting way. But it gets to this idea that Democrats may get helped in some of these, whether it's state house races or congressional races, by the Republican candidates who win these primaries. And to the extent that there is a nutcase like this guy who wins the Republican primary, and he has, all of a sudden that race in the state legislature becomes far more competitive and a greater chance of a Democratic pickup just because of how evil and crazy this guy is. So that's another reason to pay attention to local political races.
Yeah, you're right. And I hope that that's the effect. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit more later on. Of course, it's like in one direction you have, they are fielding crazier and crazier candidates. They're also gerrymandering the hell out of the country and passing laws to make it harder to vote. So that might ease the path a little bit for some of their crazies. But as you pointed out, he is insane. Some conservative groups have even condemned him for his recent comments, saying that not only his casual joke about liking sexual assault, but also the Russian invasion of Ukraine, they called it despicable, disqualifying, saying that he is unworthy to serve in the Michigan legislature. One would think, I don't know, Marjorie Greene is a congresswoman and she believes in Jewish space lasers, so God only knows. Here's a few of the other things he's said online. Feminism is only applied against white men because it has absolutely nothing to do with protecting women as a sex or defending the feelings of individual women. It is a Jewish program to degrade and subjugate white men. Okay, the right supposedly takes anti-Semitism seriously. We'll see. There's this meme about that Jewish people are the real virus in the world. And look, there are so many other, if you go through his posts about the Rothschilds, and I mean, it's a lot of conspiracies generally tied to someone Jewish. And he won the primary. It is amazing what you can get away with right now on the right, David.
And it gets to, I mean, there have been a number of books and articles that are being written about what's happening in Ohio and Wisconsin and Michigan because of the gerrymandering. People are trying to be like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Donald Trump because they feel like, oh, that's what they aspire to. And as a result, because a lot of these candidates at the local level are not facing competitive races, they can be as crazy as they want, and their Republican conservative district is not going to hold them to account. And in many cases, I would imagine if you polled most voters in Michigan in this particular district, they probably didn't know most of the stuff about them. Well, now they're going to find out. But again, we have an institutional flaw in the way our politics is set up, particularly among conservatives right now, where they don't face the kind of competition, the kind of scrubbing that they should be facing before a primary. And as a result, you get, you know, lunatic anti-Semites like this who actually are on the ballot for the general election.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these sorts of crazy, maybe not him, maybe he'll be too much, but the people, the new candidates who are patterning themselves after like the Boeberts and the Gateses and the Greens and the Cawthorns can probably raise money. They'll get endorsements from people like Trump. They can appear on right-wing media. Whatever obstacles the establishment could throw up on the right, if they wanted to, and they don't even necessarily generally seem willing to, I feel like there's a lot more like ways around those obstacles for truly crazy candidates at this point.
Yeah, it's almost like there's an incentive out there. The crazier things you say, the more media attention you may get, the more, you know, higher profile your media profile, because people are curious. They're going to want to interview this guy. Did you really say it? Did you really mean it? And again, there's this sort of built-in, baked-in incentive to have people saying more and more extreme things, particularly in districts that are all conservative or all Republican, because that's how you break ahead. That's how you set yourself apart. And we haven't yet figured out in America yet, in these particular districts, how do we still hold people to account? How do we make them have some shame when the political system won't give that any of them?
Seems like a good time to figure it out. Well, we are rapidly running out of hours, so let's jump into our last topic with this video.
Really concerned about right now.
I don't want them to digitize us.
You don't want them what?
To digitize us. I don't want to take medicine that'll hurt people.
What was the word you used though? I haven't heard that.
Digital.
And what does that mean?
They're trying to make us robots. They're trying to make it where we have no choice and nothing, to where they can control us from what they put in our bodies.
And eventually we'll actually be robots?
According to what they're saying, not robots, but according to what they've already got, a full man-made working female robot.
So it is time to check in on the convoy protest. It's a great video there by the Good Liars. You should follow on TikTok, who have been going and trying to suss out from individuals involved in the protest what exactly it's about. That woman is saying she doesn't want to be digitized or turned into a robot in some form. Not a robot, which I'm glad that she acknowledged that, except they do actually have full robots, and we will have our free will taken away in some way digitally, I guess via the vaccine. Look, some are a little bit more capable of making clear exactly what it's about, a protest about vaccine mandates in a country that doesn't have them. So let's jump to another individual giving his impression of what this protest is about.
As far as the states dropping the mandates now, that's all well and good. What about the next one? It's for the one after this one and the one after that one. And the border, the cross-border vax mandate, that's not fair.
It ain't gonna go over well. And I don't know why they won't give it up, because we're not giving it up. Something's gotta give.
So that's video from Rebel News, except the thing is they did give it, to the extent that they ever had it, they gave it up. There weren't mandates before. Like, you have been largely free to do virtually anything you want, aside from maybe private businesses being able to ask you to put a mask on, which they would generally think businesses are allowed to do literally anything they want. That allowance stops at the mask thing. So, David, it isn't immediately clear to me with additional research what it is that they hope to accomplish, except continue to talk about things that arguably never really existed.
Yeah, and I try to sometimes show some empathy and try to understand, where do these people come from? And in the trucking industry in particular, I get there's a lot of economic anxiety because of automation, because a lot of trucking jobs are going to disappear over the next 15 or 20 years, and these people are going to be out of work. So yes, they're anxious about that. But to take that anxiety over automation and then somehow say, well, this is part of the government effort with vaccines to digitize us or whatever it is, I mean, the effort, it doesn't make any sense. And so I think my point is, you're taking people who are very anxious and confused to begin with and don't see a very bright future, and suddenly you give them something like the vaccine and they glum onto that and say, okay, that's the way I can express my frustration.
Exactly. And this isn't about, like, I know some people are very ready to mock them. This isn't what this is really about. Yes, these, like the woman with the digital, like, is she making much sense? No. But why would she at this point? I mean, think about from her point of view, she's absorbed two solid years of people in fancy suits with expensive sets telling her a million different conspiracy theories. She has been trained to believe that there must be something. And if she can't express what it is that she's worried about, it's only because the explanation to her never made any sense. So they are anxious. I believe David is right. They should be anxious. They deserve some empathy, but we also have to get them away from this propaganda. Let's see, William Acton sent a super chat saying, hey John, my wife Gina fell in love with you after I got her watching your show. Any chance she could get a birthday shout out? There is some chance. William Acton said, no, I'm kidding. Happy birthday. Thank you for watching, Gina. Much appreciate you being here. Thank you. And Rochelle says, John's shirt says it's officially spring as I freeze in Kansas City. I can't even imagine. I find it to be kind of unbearably cold in LA. I grew up in Connecticut, and I have been made so weak, David, by West Coast weather.
Well, you'll appreciate this. It was 70 degrees here in Connecticut yesterday, and tomorrow we're getting snow. So, you know, that 50 degree temperature change that you're used to from having grown up with it, it's insanity.
I do remember it. It's been a while. Beck says, moving to electric cars could mean more dependence on fossil fuels to charge said cars unless we invest in alternative energy as well. Well, Beck, you will be happy to hear that I support that. And I believe that those should go very much hand in hand.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.